Monday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Jason Lewis, Minnesota's Mr. Ray, going to join us in about 35 minutes from now. We'll get an update from him on whether or not he's running for office again.
Run. He needs to run.
Jason, you were born to run.
That's right.
Have you seen, we were talking a moment ago, this is incredibly relevant to a conversation we were having off the air that I'm going to bring to on the air. We were talking about how that movie Yesterday is coming out soon, and that's the story of a guy who ends up basically, I guess in a nutshell, he bangs his head and he wakes up in a world where everybody else has forgotten about...
Like, the Beatles never happened.
But he knows the Beatles.
He knows their whole catalog. He can play all of their songs, can sing all of their songs. But apparently, in this new world that he wakes up in, the Beatles were never a thing. So he starts performing these songs and suddenly, you know, rises to amazing stardom, and everybody thinks he's amazing and can't believe all these incredible songs that he's coming up with when he's just ripping off Beatles songs that they'd never heard.
It looks fantastic.
I am so excited for that movie.
There's another one coming out, and it's similar to this, and I wonder if this is going to be a new slew of films that are like this. This other one, I saw a trailer for it over the weekend, It was a guy growing up who discovered I think he's from India, and he discovers Bruce Springsteen, and it completely changes his life, and he's living in America. Mm-hmm. So the whole movie is him basically getting into, born in the USA, that record, and him getting into that record. And I'm not a big fan of Bruce Springsteen, but that movie also looks really good. I'm really looking forward to Yesterday.
That surprises me, because I know you're not the biggest Beatles fan.
No, I'm not.
I would not have picked that as a movie that you would be excited to go see.
It just looks really good.
Yeah, I think it's just a cool concept.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't really seen a concept like that before.
I think if I allowed myself, I would end up getting into the Beatles. I just simply have chosen not to. For no good reason whatsoever. Like, I like all the bands that sound like the Beatles. Like, I loved Oasis. Jellyfish for a time. I loved all those guys that just sounded like the Beatles, so maybe I should, you know. Drew, make me a mix CD.
Of the Beatles?
Yeah.
I can do that. I have like 9 blank CDs that I have to figure out what I'm going to do with.
There you go.
I'm going to make you 9 Beatles mix CDs.
Or you could just, you know, buy their CDs.
or I could just go to Apple Tunes.
And, yeah, Apple Tunes.
Because I have the...
I don't know if it's Apple Tunes.
I have the... Or whatever it is. Wrong. It's iTunes on Apple. I have the Apple thing where I can just go and I'll listen to some Beatles on the way home today. If that movie were about me, it would be me waking up in a world where nobody had ever heard of Depeche Mode, yet I know all their music.
Right.
If it was you, would it be Southern Culture on the Skids?
Well, and, you know, I'd rather pick a band that has had, you know, a fair amount of commercial success.
Okay, good,
I love me
point.
Some Southern Culture on the Skids. They're my favorite band, but, you know, if I suddenly woke up and was the only person familiar with their catalog and started playing their songs, people would be like, oh, that's cute.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who would you pick?
That's an okay song, I guess.
What world would you pick to wake up in that nobody had heard of it before, but you know all the music and you could capitalize on it?
Well, it wouldn't even be based on, like, personal preference. Like, who would be the most commercially viable and successful?
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I'd probably go with
that. But you'd have to sing like Michael
Prince.
Jackson.
You'd go with Prince.
Prince.
I'd go Taylor Prince. Swift.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I figured that. It's not that as much. Yeah.
I'm okay with being Taylor Swift.
And then you'd be dealing with a lot of woke controversy right now.
Yeah. Give me all the woke.
And then you'd live in a world where I was the one singing Erotic City.
Okay.
That would be the world we live in right now.
I don't know if that's a world I want to live in.
Man, I don't think it's a world I want to live in.
I would be curious to visit that world. That would be...
I would be the one famous for a song called Erotic City.
That's a pretty you and me.
I like that song. All right, Star Tribune. A state economic development program intended to foster economic growth in northern Minnesota's Iron Range has given more money per capita in the last 5 years for projects in influential state Senate Minority Leader Tom Bach's district than any other by about one third, according to a Star Tribune review of public records.
Yeah.
The pattern of grants is distributed by the Iron Range Resources Rehabilitation Board, also known as the IRRB, has opened the agency to new allegations of political favoritism 3 years after a state audit questioned its governance structure and oversight of grants and loans.
Yeah, it's look, this is one of those, you know, everybody knows that the IRRRB is a home for cronyism. It's a home for graft. It's a home for, you know, doling out grants to favorable areas. This is what it is. The Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. When are you going to be done rehabilitating? is there a cap?
There should be. There should be a deadline.
Like, is there a goal for this board? And once you've achieved that goal, can you go away, kind of thing? Because it doesn't appear to be that it's just going to be there forever, and it's just going to get money, and it's going to hire people at six-figure salaries. It's going to pay them six figures to retire and then rehire them for $40-something an hour as a mentor and a consultant. And then this is what this board does. And until people actually start to care, and, you know, actually show up and you know, raise some hell about how corrupt this whole board is, it's not going to change.
Yeah, it's in the name. It's rehabilitation. It's not oversight. Like, if it was the Iron Range Resources and Oversight Board, I'm like, okay, that's a continuing issue. But there should be a sunset of, we have now rehabbed.
Yeah, well, rehabilitation, you know, there's an end to that at some point, right?
IRRRB Commissioner Mark Phillips has said the decisions on which projects to fund come from a, I love this, so it's not just a scoring system.
It's a rigorous.
Ooh, so rigorous.
Rigorous scoring system.
We score hard, and yeah, we scored hard a lot.
I've actually got a little bit of info on whether or not, on how the scoring system works, and if it's a project that's in Tom Bach's district, that's an immediate 100 points.
Oh, so they're awarding arbitrary points like your news quiz?
It's an immediate 100 points, which is the most any project can get.
So Mark Phillips is like the Drew Lee of the IRRRB, just awarding arbitrary points to
all judges' decisions are final.
Yeah, man, his stats give him a lot of money. Like Tom Bach, it's like all the money.
Yeah.
Phillips is facing renewed scrutiny over longstanding perceptions of mismanagement and cronyism at the agency, which is funded with mining proceeds.
Perceptions.
That's silly.
People perceive it to be corrupt.
They see
People
it.
Perceive the cronyism.
They see it happening, and then they go, hey, look at that.
Why does it have that perception? Is it because it's exactly what goes on?
Bach is
what perceive me as being bald
is what is true. I looked at you again to make sure things hadn't changed. Let's see. Bach is widely credited with having helped save Phillips' job after the Radinovich controversy erupted in April. He came under fire after fast-tracking and subsequent resignation of the former state representative Joe Radinovich to a civil service job that paid $100,000. Phillips, who has known Bach since the 80s, acknowledged the professional relationship. He has a house near Bach's, but they don't see each other socially, Phillips said. Yeah, they just see him in wire transfers, apparently.
Yeah, they see each other in the basement of parking garages wearing trench coats, handing briefcases full of cash to each other. That's where they see each other. It wasn't a social visit.
No. He didn't talk about the new Taylor Swift album or anything.
Yeah. And let's not forget, you know, you mentioned the Radinovich controversy. Then it was just in the last couple of weeks that we've had the story about the agency paying somebody $166,000 to retire.
Right.
They paid him $166,000 for early retirement, and then subsequently hired him back as a consultant. Like, here's $166,000, go retire. Now we're going to hire you back and pay you $40 an hour as a mentor or a consultant.
Life must be good, right?
Sure. Yeah, if you know the right people.
The grants are scored rigorously and independently by three IRRRB staff.
So rigorous.
they score hard.
Oh.
All the hard scoring.
What's all the groaning happening in the other room? I'm scoring.
All right, so Drew, let's make a note. Sam, make a note, and you keep it there, and we'll put it up to remember on Friday when we do the news quiz. Yeah. I want you to rigorously score during the news quiz.
Okay.
1 point, Sam.
You get a point. I'm going to put this point on the paper real hard.
I don't know why, but for some reason, I'm a little uncomfortable.
The Star Tribune reviewed several years of grants just this year. Here we go. Box District successfully won more than $2.7 million.
Wow.
$300,000 for Two Harbors Performing Arts Center, $250,000 for water and sewer improvements in Silver Bay, $600,000 for infrastructure needed to rebuild a grocery store that burned down in Box hometown of Cook, population 574.
Wow.
That's got to be one heck of a grocery store, man. I don't. Just looking at those numbers, 574 people, grocery store, $600,000. I don't know. I'm not in the grocery store infrastructure business, so I don't know how that translates. Bach represents the sprawling northeastern Minnesota district, which includes the entire Arrowhead region, parts of the Iron Range as well. Let's see. The district state of Senator Justin Eichhorn, a Republican out of Grand Rapids, received $517,000 this year, or about one-fifth the money granted to Boggs District.
Oh, nice.
Even though they represent roughly the same number of constituents who live in the area of northeastern Minnesota eligible for grants.
So if you're wondering, you know, a lot of times we've asked this question about Minnesota politics. Like, you look at greater Minnesota, you know, outstate Minnesota, and it's like, you hear the stories over and over and over. You go out there and you talk to these people and you realize, you know, they're fairly conservative leaning people. And then you wonder, why don't Republicans do better in some portions of the state? Well, maybe this has something to do with it. Maybe they know, you know, you got to have that DFL by your name if you want to get some of that sweet, sweet IRRRB money.
Certainly that population of 574 that got themselves a brand new grocery store in Cook, along with the Two Harbors Performing Arts Center and the sewer and water improvements in Silver Bay, I'm thinking they're all very, very happy with Bach. Let's see. Bach said the projects are scored fairly. Remember, they're rigorously scored, remember?
Rigorously, yeah.
And that the best projects win grants.
Uh-huh.
It's not divided up by the House or Senate district. Communities with good, sound projects and that leverage other money will be successful in their grant applications, said Bach. Stancy, like other legislators interviewed, declined to speculate on whether the close friendship between Bach and Phillips influences the grant distribution. But she said she remains frustrated by the lack of transparency about spending and what she sees as the boys club atmosphere at the agency. Yeah.
This whole thing just reeks of cronyism. And that's been the story of the IRRRB for as long as I've been paying attention to it, at least.
I love Phillips. He says Phillips acknowledged that good old boy politics may have been the practice of the agency in the 1970s, but that culture's changed. It's a pretty transparent, strict process, wow. He said.
He just mansplained to her, didn't he?
Seriously. Yeah. That was all the mansplaining.
He just mansplained.
Right there.
Yeah, that was like the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, no, we don't do that anymore.
Bell bottoms and teak, you know, big bushy mustaches. All those byproducts of the 70s. We're no longer adhering to those good old boy practices.
This is a good job by Kulikin and Tori Van Ude putting this story together.
Yeah.
And for the Star Tribune, it's one of those stories where, because, you know, they're being journalists, they can't just come right out and say, but, you know, they put all the pieces out there for you. You read the story and it's clear. I mean, it's obvious that that's what's going on here, that, you know, the people with the better relationships, the people with the more tenure, the people with more political pull. And so Tom Bach has a lot of political pull, are going to get the lion's share of all the money doled out. And it's going to remain that way until this board is either dissolved or massively reformed. There is very little transparency in how this board doles out money. And that's been the problem with it. And there's very little transparency and oversight as to who this board hires and what they hire them to do and how much they make. You know, it's a place to park political operatives for a while. It's been like this for a long time so they can make some money and start gearing up for their next run for office.
Coming up, we will be talking with Jason Lewis, the nationwide MoveOn.org impeachment rallies. And not a lot of people showed up for them. I know.
What?
I know. It's so sad.
But I thought the entire country was just waiting for the opportunity to impeach the orange man.
We'll, you know what? Let's do this, Drew. Let's keep with the theme. I have in my hands, we're talking about sort of government money and grant money. I have the five most absurd ways governments wasted their money.
And it's 30 and 103.5 FM.
(Song) 651-989-5855 is the phone number to call if you'd like to take part in the program at any time. That'll get you right in there to the lovely, talented, radiant, and effervescent Sam. Or you can hit #250 on any mobile device and just say TCNT as well.
Before we
Sam is dying to hear from you.
Always am.
Before we dive into the five most absurd ways the government wasted their money. This is in response to the lopsided grants on the iron range. We'll be talking with Jason Lewis just after the bottom of the hour. First off, though, Men's Health. Did you ever watch the show Psych?
I've seen a few episodes. Heard it was a very good show, but never really got into it.
Sam, did you ever watch the show Psych?
I did not.
Only according to the article here for Men's Health, only devoted fans, I never watched it, of the show Psych, which went off the air in 2014, will likely remember a relatively minor detail from a 2009 episode in which one of the characters, the show's protagonist, is shown frantically working out on an elliptical machine and a note is attached to it. And it reads, "If your heart rate drops below 150, you die." In addition to being a shameless nod to speed, the note actually was also a cruel gag, a ploy to make the individual go and work out. Well, Ryan Sturbins, a 30-year-old aerospace engineer, has put on a few pounds and felt inspired to make a change. He wondered if it might be possible to rig his television, and by extension, his Netflix account to his exercise bike. So in lieu of the life or death stakes from the proposal on the show, the consequences of slowing down would merely cause his television to turn off. In short, he'd only be able to watch TV if he was simultaneously working out. I think it's brilliant. I love this idea. I would do it if I could.
You can.
I know. Well, I mean, but I'm not as technically savvy as this guy is to hook up my TV to. You can. Look at me smiling like that. Just go do it, John.
Yeah, John.
Just go do it.
You said you'd do it.
I said I would if I could. But you can. I'm not that technically inclined. Right now, I do find shows to watch when I get on the elliptical at home because it makes the time go by faster. He already.
I need to set up a device. So like Star Wars cannot be played in your house. Unless you are on your stationary bike.
No, we will not be doing that. Like, we can choose other things.
No, nothing even Star Wars
no.
related.
No.
We'll play.
No, I found the best thing to do, which works out great, is YouTube is fantastic for riding the elliptical and trying to find things to occupy your mind. Because those videos are so segmented, so many of them are so segmented and short. That if you just watch like three or four in succession, like got my workout in and the time just whizzes by. You gotta watch stuff you're not familiar with though. So that's why the Star Wars didn't necessarily work because I'm familiar with all those. So right. I need something that's gonna like really sort of suck me in. And let's get back to this guy though. Sturbins already liked to watch Netflix while working out, but found it was hard to sustain his momentum when he'd get into a given show. He found himself getting too absorbed in the plot and then biking too slow. So part of the design, he knew he wanted to fold in a mechanism that would beep at him twice if his pace dropped too much and then would close Netflix altogether if he didn't heed the bike's warnings and speed up again.
Oh, no.
I think it's brilliant. So he says he worked a little bit with a Bluetooth keyboard and uses a small Bluetooth chip normally designed for keyboards, and his computer thinks it's just an ordinary keyboard. He programs it. He uses an open source platform, which allowed him to program the bike using a USB cable and no special tools. So once he programmed the device, he said it was simple. He placed a magnet on the bike pedal along with a magnetic sensor next to it.
So he's given you all of the steps there.
Yeah,
right there.
It's crazy.
So
and it's all
sounds really simple,
too.
John.
Each time the magnet lines up to the sensor, it records it as a rotation. If the bike doesn't see the rotations happening fast enough, and he's ignored the warnings, the computer will then just basically go and shut Netflix off. It's fantastic. Cost him $30 in parts. So he should market it, and then people like me can go and buy it.
This is actually, I think, a very marketable idea, is, you know, a piece of exercise equipment that connects to, you know, a streaming device of some sort, and it shuts it off if you're not doing it.
That's fantastic. I really dig it. I dig it. All right, So we were talking about these lopsided grants and the favoritism taking place between Mark Phillips, the IRRB commissioner, and also Senate Minority Leader Tom Bach. Let's get to this. We've been holding on to it for quite a long time, though. Crack.com, one of our favorite websites. The five most absurd ways the government's wasted their money. Number five hits close to home.
Yeah, number five is probably your favorite.
I knew this, too. The United States National Guard spent $88 million between 2011 and 13 in for the honor of putting the words National Guard on a lot of my clothes. On Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s car and my car right next to Mountain Dew. So basically...
How'd that work out?
Yeah, 2012.
$88 million you know, to advertise on Dale Jr.'s car, to advertise on a NASCAR car. So I imagine recruiting just served. Right,
24,800 potential recruits claimed that they decided to join the Guard after seeing the ads in the vicinity of the fast racing cars. Of those, 20 managed to meet the necessary qualifications to get into service, which is the opposite of surprising when you consider the age of the average NASCAR viewer, according to the article, is 58. Not true. And of those, not the average, no, not anymore. Yeah, because there's not many viewers. And of those, exactly zero ended up guarding the nation.
So they got zero recruits for their $88 million.
I will, because I have to, I will push back a little bit on that because I can. There's a lot of exposure involved with the National Guard, and it's not just about recruits, obviously, but it is.
But it is. It's good branding. The National Guard doesn't need branding.
Yeah, I know.
They need recruits.
Hence why they're not in the car anymore and Junior's not racing. The Marine Corps and Navy tried too, and those didn't really work either.
I've got a question, just the efficacy overall of advertising on NASCAR vehicles. It's just, it doesn't seem like the type of thing that would influence a purchase.
It has for me.
Well, but you've got to agree that you're an exception. You know, to the average sort of casual. You're a hardcore NASCAR fan.
If you're a NASCAR fan and you watch the races every week, I'm going to venture a guess that you have a driver and that some of your purchases have been based off of that driver. I'm qualifying that as I'm not gonna say hardcore, I'll just say a fan who watches the races every week. If you're watching the races every week, I'm probably gonna argue that you've got a driver that you follow. And if you got a driver that you follow, then some of your... And I'll give you a good example. Alex Bowman took over for Junior, and the nationwide insurance sponsorship went with him. They announced they were going to get out of their contract early, and they're not going to sponsor him next year. And I was reading several posts from individuals saying, well, I'm going to go ahead and switch my insurance because I switched over to Nationwide because of the sponsorship, right? So... There isn't. I mean, I don't know how much of that is, but I know that when it came to I know for me when it came to Junior, I bought a lot. I mean, I shopped at particular places, bought certain soda products, all because of the jeans. I still have Junior. I still have Wrangler jeans from his sponsor. Look at me like that. I still have jeans that I bought specifically because of the Junior sponsorship. I would avoid the other brands. So I don't know how much of a minority or majority I particularly am, but obviously it works because they keep getting sponsorships. Number four. Venezuela gave Danny Glover $27 million for a movie that never went into production. So he'd been trying to make a film about an individual in Venezuela, the man who helped lead the Haitian slaves in their rebellion against France. In 2007, the Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez, stepped in to make it happen. The Venezuelan government gave Glover another $18 million to shoot the movie in Venezuela and kickstart the country's film industry. Venezuela already had a film industry, and they weren't happy about their president giving money to fund 5 years of local cinema to a foreigner. Glover reportedly convinced Wesley Snipes, Chitwell Ejiofor, Angela Bassett, and Mos Def to appear in the movie, but the final cast was no one because it never materialized. $27 million for a movie that never went into production.
Wow.
Number three, we'll get to this in just a moment. The Obama administration spent $5 million a year trying to troll ISIS.
$5 million a year?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, he approved a $5 million yearly budget for the program, which looked for people praising ISIS on social media and then tried to smoothly slide into the conversations and convince any jihad sympathizers of their evil ways. Unfortunately, it turns out that even $5 million doesn't get you competent Twitter writers. We have to have
that. Just sounds so Obama.
We got to talk.
Sounds like something so Obama. Like, hey, let's just engage in a dialogue with him on Twitter, because that's changed so many minds of so many people, is hearing a dissenting opinion on Twitter.
We have to ask David about this.
Yeah.
I want to know David's thoughts on this particular effort.
Matt in Minneapolis, good morning. You're on with Justice and Drew.
Hey, when it comes to that NASCAR sponsorship stuff, I buy a lot of products that my race teams, and it could be NASCAR or Indy or even motocross, that people that I like sponsor. And one reason I do that is I want them to succeed, and it goes down to grassroots racing, growing up racing. If the racetrack doesn't have the money or the teams don't have the money, they can't put on racing, and we don't get to watch it. So as a fan, it's our way of supporting what we like.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, it's a big deal, and like I said, down to the people at Elko, they need that money, the ticket, the hot dogs, everything. Without that, we don't got nothing.
All right, appreciate your call, Matt. Thank you. Yeah, that makes sense to me. If you're just doing it, you know, as a conscious decision to support the driver of mm-hmm. your choice, that makes sense to me. But in terms of just general advertising, I don't know how effective it is.
Yeah, I like it because it allows me the opportunity to support my driver. It allows me the opportunity to feel like I'm supporting it in public, even sort of at a personal level, because I know that I'm wearing this stuff because Junior sponsored it, even though nobody else knows. It makes me feel good. Number two, the Pentagon wasted at least $26 million on camouflage that actually made the soldier stand out. In 2007, the Afghan Minister of Defense was browsing military uniform patterns online, as one does, apparently, when he came across a lush forest camouflage design that was so him. He told the Pentagon about it, and soon the U.S. approved the purchase of 1,364,602 uniforms, plus pants. Using this design, which was owned by a company called Hyper Stealth Biotechnology Corporation, and admittedly, the new duds did make the Afghan National Army look pretty fly. No testing was done on the design's effectiveness before buying it, however. It was chosen solely because the minister thought it looked cool. On top of that, the Pentagon already owned a bunch of similar patterns that the minister could have used for free. According to a watchdog, the decision cost the U.S. between $26 and $28 million. The photo, by the way, this is a lush forest camouflage design. Can I reiterate that this was the Afghanistan Minister of Defense? So the green against the brown really stood out, as you could tell in the photo. I don't know, obviously it's radio, but you could tell in the photos that anybody wearing that in a desert would be like, hey, he's right there. It was brutal.
Hey, look, there's Jim.
It was brutal.
Jim and his stupid camouflage.
Lastly, number one on the most ridiculous ways that the governments have spent their money. Every politician wants to leave their mark on their country, but one Indian minister spent millions of dollars on statues, mostly of himself.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Kumari Mayawati, former chief minister of India, wasn't satisfied, so he wanted several marks as big as possible all over the place. To that end, he spent millions upon millions of dollars on parks and memorials full of tributes to India's greatest heroes, including, of course, dozens of statues of himself. Wow. How arrogant do you have to be?
I want to see Trump try that.
No. Please no. Please no.
Just for the reaction.
Please no. 6'5". No.
Somebody tell Trump that's a good idea.
651-989-5855. Washington Post has an article. Will impeachment backfire on Democrats? Not if it's done right, according to this article writer. We'll talk with Jason Lewis about that. Elizabeth Warren proposing jail time for CEOs. And what is this talk of Jason Lewis running again, apparently?
Apparently that's something that might...
0.5 FM.
final segment of Monday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or you keep using that hashtag TCNT on a Twitter. You want to communicate with us at any time.
I am, well, I think we both are very pleased to welcome, as we do every Monday, Jason Lewis to the show. And Jason, you sent over, I haven't had a chance to read the story yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. HumanEvents.com, this Drudge survives without Google, so why can't legacy media? I am really looking forward to diving into that particular piece. Welcome to the show this morning.
Yeah, it's funny. They've discovered the digital newsies, especially the left-wing digital newsies at HuffPost and BuzzFeed, who are kind of sort of competing over how many lies they can say about the Russia nonsense. They are upset now and have discovered the evil nature of monopolies. It's amazing to me that these media folks who are losing their jobs because it's hard to monetize their product in the digital world are now just discovering the evil nature of monopolies, Facebook and Google and all the rest, and they're blaming their layoffs at HuffPost and BuzzFeed on these monopolies. But when they had actual monopolies, one newspaper in a metro market of a million people, one or two TV stations, there was no complaints when they had complete control over the liberal agenda. So it is an interesting piece, and I appreciate your mentioning that. It's at Human Events right now.
Yeah, thanks for sharing it with us. And you know, you made the point, and I'm referencing back to it constantly on the show, but you made a great point, you know, several months back talking about the difference between when Obama was in office and now, and how now, you know, the left has the media. They did back then, but at that point in time, they were just sort of following, you know, sort of in lockstep with Obama, and they ignored any of the majority of the conservative criticism that came. And now it's completely different. They're more than happy to grab onto any single criticism of President Donald Trump and, you know, push it forward as a news alert.
Well, what the internet has done, essentially, it has not in many ways broadened the field and given us a more even playing field, unfortunately. What it has is it has sort of created these echo chambers of liberalism. I mentioned a couple of the news sites. They're predominantly liberal. I mean, Twitter is a bunch of liberals thinking they can dox a bunch of conservatives. And so what you've got are the usual liberal mouthpieces setting out the piece from the Washington Post or the New York Times or CBS News or CNN or anybody. And then they get exacerbated. They get amplified under the echo chambers. And it's become actually an even more toxic environment where substance and policy and records take a back seat to just perpetual outrage and hate. And I'm tempted to say you can't go outside right now in Minnesota without being attacked by these swarms of horrible little creatures attacking you at every site. But I'm not talking about the gnats. I'm talking about the resistance. it's crazy right now.
And what bothers me, and you know, you've said it, and a million people have said it, you know, the answer to speech is always more speech. You know, the answer to offensive speech or speech that you disagree with or speech that you find objectionable is allowing more speech, more views. But you've got this idea that, you know, we've got this monopolistic sort of atmosphere with Google, with Amazon, with these big tech companies, with Facebook. So what's happening, of course, people are clamoring for the government to get involved and the government to intervene. And what's going to happen, you can see it, it's very obvious, the government is going to create barriers to entry to other places, to other outlets, to other opportunities for you to get a platform to speak. And then the left is going to continue this trend of deplatforming conservatives, calling them Nazis, alt-right, whatever. They're going to get them kicked off of the YouTubes and the Facebook. And then there's not going to be another place for them to go.
YouTube has already announced a policy that's moving towards all over. If you take a look at shadow banning on Twitter, if you take a look at what Facebook and the algorithms are doing there, why do you think Facebook says, oh, bring the government on, we want regulation? Because it protects their platform. It's called rent seeking. It's the oldest thing in Washington. Big monopolies love government because it protects them from smaller, more nimble competitors. To your point, Andrew, the most odd thing about the digital newsies complaining about big tech now is big tech is on their side.
Right.
I mean, the Facebook is not silencing liberals. Twitter is not silencing liberals. They are amplifying liberals. What the folks at HuffPost are upset about is they no longer get paid big money to write boring 4,000-word pieces on how evil conservatives are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But other than that, if they're just worried about that, liberalism, they've got the platforms they need.
So you were your name popped up in the news this week in regards to like your future and stuff. Would you care to elaborate on that at all, there, Jason Lewis?
Well, you know, I have been a politician now for a while, so I'll sound like one at this point in time. To the best of my recollection, gentlemen, I can't recall. No, I mean I'm looking at a lot of things. I'm certainly enjoying the heck out of joining you folks every Monday and doing the Minnesota Moment and getting back into commentary. So that's always an option. But I do think the country is at an inflection point, at a precipice in time that I haven't seen since the 1960s. And unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember the 1960s. And if we go the wrong direction next year, there may be no going back. And I don't mean to sound alarmist. I don't think we're all going to expire like Chernobyl, which, by the way, is a great series.
Yeah.
I just finished it the other night. But I think the country fundamentally changes into something that's much more European in nature, much more in a direction opposite the American experiment, which has given us all this. You know, you watch Chernobyl and you look at what under the old Soviet Union, what was considered prosperous, these massive complexes of people, teeming masses in these apartments that all look alike, crowded next to a nuclear power plant. It reminds me of sort of the Metropolitan Council's new urbanism. But America went a different way. America, why we were called the American experiment, we went to the rule of law and free markets and private property, and we have enjoyed the most remarkable experience, and remarkable prosperity the world has ever known.
Yep.
Are we going to continue that?
Yep. Yep. That was one thing that really stood out to me watching Chernobyl, and my wife and I had, you know, kept commenting on just how bleak and grim and depressing everything looked. And, you know, it occurred to me as like, well, that's all you need, right? I mean, if you've got a bunch of central planners making decisions, and they're making the decisions based on, well, what do people need? What is the bare minimum?
And they needs have to be equal.
Yeah, right.
The collectivism requires that the man serves the state, so no one can get more than the other person.
Exactly. So, you know, whether you're not a top-notch nuclear engineer who may have been able to prevent, a Chernobyl-like accident from occurring, or if you're just, you know, picking up the litter on the sidewalk, it doesn't matter. You're going to end up, you know, sort of just having exactly what you need, and that's kind of you're very correct to make an analogy to the Met Council, because the Met Council does the same thing when it talks about tackling the affordable housing crisis and trying to make sure that all of the suburbs have adequate affordable housing and that they're connected. Well, what do people need?
Anti-urban sprawl folks. Yep. and the housing density folks. It is all this horrible adherence to sort of a collectivist worldview that's like you say, that's all you need, or that we can't afford to be prosperous anymore. Mother Earth won't allow it. The economy won't allow it. Equity won't allow it. There's a thousand reasons to hold people back, and that was never part of the American dream, and that's what's at stake in 2020. So it's very important. And by the way, one more thing on Chernobyl. They actually tried to spruce it up. They tried to make it look a little better than it was. I mean, yikes. you had leaves on the trees in Moscow in March. No way.
Yeah, I don't know what show you guys watched, man. I thought that show really highlighted how well communism works. I mean,
yeah, right.
And then it was funny. I saw an article this morning. I was trying to find it in the middle of our conversation, but apparently there's a woman running for mayor somewhere, and she says, like, if she wins, she's bringing full fledged communism to the community. And I just had to laugh. I go, did you not watch the show, or did you watch it and just completely walk away with a different takeaway than the rest of us did?
And, of course, it wasn't private enterprise. It wasn't even a regulated monopoly like the utility companies in charge of the nuclear power plant, Chernobyl, which had the weakest standards. It's a great line in the trial, as you remember, where the scientist, the whistleblower scientist, says, well, the state built the nuclear power plant so it could melt down because it was cheaper. It was an easier way to do it. That's all the people needed.
Yep.
Private industry doesn't do that in America. We don't do that here. There was no such reactor in America. Never would, never could be. but only when the state controls and there's no transparency and you have absolute power are people threatened and the environment threatened. That's the great irony of it all.
And to circle back to what you started, you know, what you said at the beginning of the conversation about whether or not you might be interested in running for office, you know, don't feel like you have to sort of, you know, qualify the threat of the upcoming elections. It's not like existential. I mean, you've got candidates and prominent members of the Democratic Party that are actually running on the notion that America doesn't work anymore, that our system that our economic system and our system of governance doesn't work anymore, and it needs to be fundamentally transformed.
It's not like they refuse to control the border and build a wall. It's not like they're for post-birth abortion. It's not like they're for banning air travel and private health insurance. I mean, it's not like, well, actually it is pretty much like
that. Yeah, it's all those horrible things.
It's kind of amazing, but you wonder if the American people understand it the way you guys understand it, and that's the existential threat. It's not what they're trying to do. I think it's out there in plain view. The question is, do Americans realize it, and do Minnesotans realize that there's no going back once you go down that road?
A couple of different articles this morning. There's an interesting piece. We won't have time to get into the details now. I might save it for tomorrow's show. But the Washington Post, will impeachment backfire on Democrats? Not if they do it right. And the article writer in this tries to make the argument of how the Democrats could do it right. At the same time, you've got Ocasio-Cortez saying the pressure to impeach Trump is justifiable and growing every day. We probably asked you this last week, but it's a new week. You know, where does this go? Are they going to move forward, do you think, or are they just going to continue to argue and push about moving forward because it serves the left's agenda better to just have it kind of sitting out there?
Yeah, this is a microcosm of the conundrum the Democrats find themselves in, whether it's impeachment, the single issue, or whether it's the presidential election. One of the things that's going to be interesting to watch is if a Biden, who is basically Hillary Clinton in a suit, if he takes the nomination away from Bernie Sanders again, where will the indivisible quote-unquote progressives go? It'll be two cycles in a row where the power structure has snatched their utopian dreams from them. So impeachment's sort of the same thing. I mean, are they going? There is a group of true believers who want to do this regardless of the political outcomes. And then there's the Nancy Pelosi's of the world who say, well, I'd like to do it, but it might hurt us electorally. So let's just keep the investigations going, keep it going, everything except a vote. And that's where the people who just want power are really at. And it's interesting what happened this week. Amy Klobuchar came out in favor of impeachment. Right. Dean Phillips came out against it. And Angie Craig, well, nobody knows where Angie Craig stands. So, which means, of course, she just wants power. She doesn't want to take a position. There's even an indivisible group down in the 2nd Congressional District, Egan and Burnsville, that has done a 180. They were just rabid for impeachment for 2.5 years. And now, in order to protect Angie Craig, they're saying, well, you know, maybe that's not the best route. From indivisible? This is how pathetic the goal of power can become, how intoxicating the quest for power can become. And this is why, by the way, you've got Nancy Pelosi talking about prison time and Elizabeth Warren talking about jailing executives without criminal intent. The quest for power is palpable in these people, and that ought to scare the bejeebers out of most people.
Well, we all know how important town halls were to the indivisible group. So I can only assume, Jason Lewis, that Angie Craig has held, you know, weekly and numerous town halls to satisfy that craving for one-to-one, you know, personal interaction with the congressman that indivisible so sincerely desired.
Well, it's amazing what you can get away with when the press is on your side. I mean, there wasn't a day went by when I was in office where the media didn't call. What's your comment on Trump's comments today? We need your comment on Trump's comments.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are, well into the 116th, and no one knows where Ms. Craig stands on Medicare for all, on impeachment, on a border wall, on post-birth abortion. None of that. Nobody knows. Why? Because the press isn't asking her, they're covering for her.
Yeah.
That is, you know, the blue wave proved that you can lie your way into office if nobody's correcting you. The question is, again, will Will the people see through this and realize, man, oh, man, this is not what we bargained for in the 116th. They've done nothing. They haven't even passed a budget.
Yeah.
All they want to do is investigate the president, whether they take an impeachment vote or not, which does nothing for Minnesotans or the American people.
Well, I'm sure
you... And the Senate, I mean, the Senate is now becoming the last firewall of freedom.
I know, and they want to abolish it. South, and there are people on the left that want to abolish it. There are people on the left that are legitimately pushing to abolish the Senate. It's terrifying. Jason Lewis, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoy our Monday chats. And, you know, keep us posted on your decision-making process there, sir.
You'll be the first to know. Thanks, everybody.
Take care. We'll talk to you next week.
On tomorrow's show, this is a bit of breaking news. You know, the Parkland survivor, the conservative Kyle Kashev?
Yeah.
He was getting into Harvard, right? And he his editorial that was written about his accepting it and how happy he was. Apparently, Harvard has now rescinded his admission
of course
to it. Yeah, it just came out, so something we can dive into on tomorrow's show.
Yeah, and also Pete Hegseth will join us for his regular Tuesday visit as well. Have a great day, everybody. We're back tomorrow, 6 to 9.
Do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. I don't give me integration, give me truth to me.